Coming up on Weekend America.
What happens when a gated community runs smack into this weekend's real estate market?
The break-ins, which just occurred, the busted windows, the guys down the street, the tailgating, the pit bulls. I think that's all I can think of right now.
Open houses in Las Vegas ain't what they used to be. I'm John Moe.
And I'm Desiree Cooper. For American troops, life can be frightening. Or just weird.
It's kind of crazy when you can come over to the desert and ski in the middle of a mall.
A weekend pass to Dubai. And speaking of kind of crazy, how about a three-day road trip with a hamster?
Well, we made it to the room, Fuzzy. Room 307, the Fairfield Inn. All right, you got your water. Give you some food. You're eating the mic again.
That hamster never did chip in for gas. Weekend America, after the news.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
Welcome to the weekend in St. Paul. I'm John Moe, sitting in for Bill Radke.
And here with John in St. Paul, I'm Desiree Cooper. Later this hour, a hamster takes a road trip. Where would you take a hamster on vacation?
Oh, if I have a hamster, I would like to go to Florida with my hamster.
If I had a hamster to take on vacation, I would take it to a large cedar forest. Because hamsters live in cedar.
I'd take him somewhere he wants to go.
Probably somewhere with an amusement park.
Maybe somewhere with a lot of hamster wheels or like little hamster play area.
I think I would probably take my pet hamster to the zoo. And the reason I would take him to the zoo is to show him all the things that he shouldn't come in contact with.
Those voices came from Ann Arbor, San Francisco, and Boston.
Well, more tough news for the housing market this week. New home sales dropped to their lowest level since 1991. And according to RealtyTrack.com, the number of foreclosures is up 57% from a year ago. Well, foreclosures mean vacant homes, which could lead to lower property values, increased possibility of crime. People who live near those homes want to get them sold and occupied. So real estate agents are arranging weekend bus tours of foreclosed homes, hoping to interest buyers eager for a bargain. It's happening all over the country. Mari Saito rode along with one such tour last weekend in the western suburbs of Cleveland.
It's a gorgeous Saturday afternoon in Northeast Ohio. Myself and 30 other people have decided to spend it on a bus with a couple real estate agents, a home inspector, and a mortgage broker.
Yeah, just a few things. Now, my name is Pat Fury. We want to thank you for coming on board our foreclosure bus.
Pat Fury and co-workers from Remax Crossroads in Strongsville, Ohio, have rented the bus, brought lunch, and scheduled appointments for us to look at houses in different states of foreclosure.
We're going to see properties today from 117.5 up to 270. So it just makes us aware that foreclosure doesn't affect just one segment or another. It's across the board.
Shopping for a foreclosed house is not for the faint of heart. One house stinks of mold and damp, and many of us don't go in. At another, we trudge through thick leaves that have yet to be raked off the driveway of a bank-owned ranch-style house. Inside, wires hang from ceilings for light fixtures long gone. Pink antifreeze is in the toilets in order to stop the pipes from freezing in Cleveland winters.
Is there a basement?
I don't know. There's no lights, though. You can't tell.
Oh, the power's out.
There's something weird about walking through houses that people have lost for financial reasons. But tour goer Marianne Mozak says what she likes is that the trip seems more focused on solving the problem.
I think someone described this as the tour of tears, which is kind of, you know, a sad way to put it. You know, you don't want to capitalize or be predatory on someone else's loss. But at the same time, I'm sure that the people in this neighborhood want to have people who are able to, you know, keep their property up and make payments.
Most people on the tour are looking for a home to live in, not to rent or flip. Back on the bus, there's a man sitting across from me. He's writing notes on his property information sheet.
So I see you guys put a big X on that one, huh?
Put a big X.
Big X.
Well, it's,
that means
that really
marks the spot. They're coming back.
It's not really what we were looking for.
As the bus continues on through tree-lined streets, people working in their yards stop what they're doing and stare. This foreclosure tour, like others around the country, has gotten lots of press coverage, and people recognize the bus.
Lots of friendly people on our street. We love our street. We love our neighborhood.
Lots of kids.
That's the next-door neighbor at one of the homes we visit. Laura Ryder and a gaggle of kids on bikes and scooters wave to buyers as we walk into the house next door to hers.
It hit me as soon as you stopped. I've heard of this, but I didn't realize this house was on that list. So, I'm looking at it as a hopeful sign. You're bringing a lot of people over here.
What surprises me is how nice the neighborhoods we drive into are. As the bus tries to park on a quiet cul-de-sac in North Royalton, we temporarily block a new model Jaguar trying to pull out of a neighboring driveway.
We're the new owners.
Some of the homes on the tour are beautiful. They have ponds in the backyard and three-car garages. Others are just dated, like the one with a well-worn, wall-to-wall neon aqua rug. Wow, how do you pick this color for carpet?
You know, the scary thing is we've been looking at houses for a couple months.
And we've seen this pretty popular. House.
Yeah.
It must have been a sale that day.
Realtors say there have been no purchases yet from the foreclosure tours, but they've had plenty of calls of interest. Tickets for next Saturday's tour are already sold out.
That one scare you a little bit?
Yeah.
Well, that's when I put a big star on the top of the page for my investors.
For Week in America, I'm Mari Saito in Cleveland.
Look at this neighborhood.
Beautiful.
It's a beautiful neighborhood, and what this house is going to end up going for in the long run is going to be steel.
To see photos from the foreclosure bus tour, go to our website, weekinamerica.org.
Well, John, that's tough news for Cleveland, but they are definitely not alone. We go now to Las Vegas, which has some of the nation's highest foreclosure rates. But there, you don't need a guided bus tour to find the neighborhoods hit hardest by the real estate crisis. They're easy to recognize. Just look for the nicest communities surrounded by brick walls and elegant wrought iron gates. A few weekends ago, Week in America's Chrissy Clark visited a place just like this, the upscale Las Vegas suburb of Southern Highlands.
The first and most obvious fact of life in the gated community of San Nicolo is, of course, the gate. To get inside the gate, if you're not a homeowner, you have to dial up your host at a call box.
Hi, is this Karen?
Yes.
Hi, it's Chrissy.
Okay, I'll press you in. Hang on.
Thanks.
The gate is what gives the new Spanish-style homes just inside a sense of security, exclusivity, and a few years ago, price tags of $500,000 and up.
And the gates are swinging open.
Access granted. Please enter.
At least that's how the gate used to work, recalls Karen Lewis. Until a weekend last summer.
I came home one night. The gate was broken.
Karen moved into a house behind this gate 2 years ago with her husband and 4-year-old son. Their dream house, she calls it. High ceilings, a view of the mountains, a private golf course nearby. But that night, the night of the broken gate, was a kind of turning point for Karen. Some kids had rammed through the gate to get to a raging party next door to her house. They were racing up and down her block in their cars. And she realized the gated community she'd moved into was changing fast.
It just wasn't what I expected. The gate being continuously broken, the party.
The break-ins, which just occurred, the busted windows.
That's one of Karen's neighbors.
The mysterious neighbors across the street who don't speak and come in the middle of the night. The roommates, the broken-down cars, the pit bulls.
To understand how San Nicolo went from a place you'd expect to see golden retrievers to a place where pit bulls are the in-vogue pet, you need to back up a few years, back to when people were just moving in. Families like Karen's were buying new homes here, and so were small investors, 2 and 3 houses at a time. The places were selling like hotcakes, or another substance, as Butch, a guy who lives a few doors down, likes to say.
Wow, it's like, who needs to be a drug dealer when you can buy real estate in Las Vegas? Not that I sell drugs.
Butch bought 3 houses in the neighborhood with adjustable rate mortgages, planned to sell them for a quick profit. He lives in one of them, shares it with 2 roommates. Now that the monthly rate has ballooned, Butch can't afford it anymore. He stopped paying his mortgage in January. He guesses the bank will get around to seizing his house in another few months.
There's an empty.
Well, is it empty anymore?
It's empty.
24 of the 214 homes in San Nicolo are currently in foreclosure. Many more are vacant. Karen and her son Cooper walk around the neighborhood trying to guess which ones they are.
It's probably a foreclosure, but I'm not sure. If you see the lawn's dead.
A dead lawn is a telltale sign of a foreclosed house. Cooper thinks he's found one.
I found one.
Crumbling stucco is another sign of a foreclosed house. Homeowners forced out by the bank sometimes take their frustrations out on their walls. Karen points to a gash on the side of a porch.
This has to be willful because this house is only 4 years old. There's no way it could have this sort of damage.
So do you think that somebody's leaving the property and is just
angry?
Angry.
Yeah, which I wouldn't blame them.
It's not just foreclosures that are affecting San Nicolo. With the sagging market, investors who've avoided foreclosure still can't sell their vacant houses, so they're renting instead. Houses designed for single families are being rented to college kids or multiple families at a time.
So on the corner, we believe that it's a halfway house. There are about six cars. It seems like a bit of an AA meeting. I fully support AA, and I think it's a wonderful thing, but they don't say hi.
Later, I go to the house that Karen thinks is a halfway house.
Hi, I'm Chrissy. I'm a reporter.
Oh, sorry.
A woman named Georgina and her 12-year-old granddaughter, Topaz, crack the door open.
Everybody's asleep.
Oh, sorry about that.
Everybody work in the nighttime.
Oh, where do they work? Where do they work?
They are taxi drivers.
Oh, okay. The graveyard.
Yeah, everybody's sleeping.
They started renting this house a year ago. And they love it.
Yeah, because we have more rooms here and we are more together.
And how
many? We are going to buy the house.
Probably. You're going to buy the house?
Yeah, we're going to buy the house. Yeah, we really like the neighbor.
How many people live here?
Nine. No.
Yes.
Cállate.
But I've been
seven.
Okay.
Seven.
These days, San Nicolo is about as ungated community-like as a gated community can be. But now that all these people from different backgrounds are stuck here together inside the gate, interesting things have begun to happen. When I ask Karen Lewis how she thinks the real estate crisis has affected her life, she pauses. She doesn't mention the fact that her house was recently reappraised for $115,000 less than she bought it for. What she mentions is this.
There are some biases that I had that I didn't realize. You sort of stereotype people whether they can afford to live in a certain neighborhood or not. Like the neighbor next to me. They have a detailing business, so they would actually have their customers come to their house, and they would clean the cars, and they would have music playing, and they'd be sitting out in their lawn chairs drinking beer and talking to their friends in the middle of, you know, a Saturday afternoon. I didn't expect to have that kind of traffic in my street, but they're awesome neighbors. They're the ones that slow down when they see a kid.
Who cares if they leave oil stains on the pavement, a clear violation of homeowner association rules? Karen says the really important thing inside these gates is having a few neighbors she can trust to look out for her and for the occasional pit bull. In Southern Highlands, Nevada, I'm Chrissy Clark for Weekend America.
This weekend, Karen Lewis will be watching her son, Cooper, play soccer. She plans to be the loudest cheerleader out there. Special thanks to Marshall Allen of the Las Vegas Sun for first reporting on the San Nicolo community.
Weekend America is brought to you in part by Target, giving 5% of its income to the community since 1946. That now adds up to over $3 million every week. And by Clarkson Potter, publishers of The Splendid Table's How to Eat Supper, the latest cookbook inspired by the radio program for people who love to eat. Available now wherever books are sold.
Hanging out at the Hard Rock, knocking back a few drinks, skiing at a shopping mall. American servicemen and women relax in Dubai and forget about war for a while. Or try to. Next on Weekend America. It's Week in America from American Public Media. I'm John Moe, along with Desiree Cooper. Many Americans are not actually in America this weekend, talking about servicemen and women stationed overseas, many in the Middle East, where the presence of the American military is a complex and volatile issue. Osama bin Laden, insurgents in Iraq, all cite American troops on Arab soil as a reason for their attacks. We've been bringing you a series of stories called Weekend Pass, stories about our troops and what they do on their downtime. For our latest installment, we go to the booming city of Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. That's where U.S. warships stop every month or so to rest and refuel. But as reporter Kelly McEvers tells us, they don't necessarily want anyone to know about it.
People who've lived in Dubai a long time say they can tell a U.S. soldier from a mile away. Short hair, backpack, always travels in threes. These days, though, you don't see so many buzz cuts. That's at least partly because a few months ago, some Marines on leave in Dubai got into big trouble.
What I heard was that they were in a taxi, very drunk, and they were making some kind of obscene gestures to a lady that was driving a car. This lady got offended, called the police, and they got pulled over and thrown into jail.
The Marines didn't know this at the time, but the lady in the car was a member of Dubai's royal family. The person telling this story at an outdoor cafe in Dubai is Claire Kelly, an Australian who's been based here for years. I later confirmed the story with Navy officers.
And after that incident, there was no shore leave for quite some time for any ship that came through.
Even when the soldiers don't have shore leave, Claire still gets to hang out with them. She's the lead singer of a cover band that performs for thousands of troops on huge Navy warships.
You've just got complete view, standing up high on the stage of the boat, completely laden with aircrafts, the sun setting in the background, and people having fun, you know.
The commanders won't let reporters come to port, and they wouldn't comment for this story. One volunteer told me they don't want to bring attention to the fact that thousands of Americans are docking in Dubai every month. So I had to try and catch the sailors around town. They've only recently been allowed to leave port again. Their first stop was Dubai's main marble and chandelier-decorated mall and its new indoor ski slope.
Did you ski or snowboard?
Yeah, I snowboarded. Fell a lot of times.
Yeah, he got soaking wet. I stayed pretty dry.
It's definitely fun, though. It's kind of crazy when you can come over to the desert and ski in the middle of a mall.
In the Navy, you don't say R&R. You say liberty. And your commanding officers make sure you know exactly what kind of liberty you have.
Liberty with a purpose. That's what they say. Liberty with a purpose.
What does that mean?
That means that we're here to show that, you know, we have fun, but we're also responsible. We don't do anything stupid and get ourselves in trouble.
Since the Marines got into trouble with the royal family, sailors have been told to be on their very best behavior in Dubai, says this Navy firefighter.
We can't walk around in like the spaghetti strap tank tops and halter tops or like mini skirts or Daisy Duke shorts.
Yeah, we just got shorts liberty this port. Before that, we had to be pants all the time.
They call it shorts liberty? That means the guys don't have to wear long pants. But most of them are wearing long pants anyway. Down the road, at a bar next to the beach, I meet some guys from Louisiana and Texas who aren't necessarily on their best behavior. They're trying to do, well, more what you'd expect sailors to do with a little liberty.
I mean, we got to get loose. Out to sea, work very hard, and we pull in, you got to get loose, so this is the place to do it.
Yeah, like what kind of loose are we talking about?
Loose however you want. They got all types of loose. I'm not going to get into that, but everybody knows what I'm talking about. You can get loose however you want to out here.
Is it pretty expensive?
Not really. I mean, you can. It's pretty much negotiable.
We get into a taxi to a hotel in the red light district.
Capital Hotel. Just follow this way.
Capital Hotel?
Yeah.
But there's a problem. It's rush hour in Dubai.
I say it's traffic now. You need more than 2 hours to Capital.
The sailors decide to abort the mission. It turns out they don't want to miss curfew. They decide to just head back to port instead, on their best behavior, after all. These sailors all serve on the USS Harry Truman, an aircraft carrier based out of Norfolk, Virginia, that patrols the Persian Gulf. As they say, they're keeping an eye on Iran. So when they get a few days off, they mainly want to relax after long hours of work on the boat. And the place to do that is one that feels familiar, the Hard Rock Cafe, Dubai. Little do the soldiers know, the Hard Rock is owned by a member of the Bin Laden family.
On the count of three, one, two,
the Australian three. Singer, Claire, and her cover band headline the Hard Rock every night. Claire knows these Americans in civilian clothes are sailors, but she's vague about it on stage.
How many people here are from the States?
No!
This next song's just for you guys.
Woo!
The Hard Rock is packed with Filipino waitresses, British tourists, and Indian expats who live here in Dubai. It seems like every other table has a plate of whipped cream sitting in front of a kid who's celebrating a birthday. I meet up with the snowboarders, Brad from Baltimore and Chris from Philly. They maintain guns and bombs on planes. Chris says he feels like he's learning something here in the UAE.
Once you hear the name Middle East, automatically anybody thinks in their mind that the Middle East, they think of guns and wars and suicide bombings and everything. And then you come to some place like the UAE and it's like, wow, everything's not like this. Everybody that dresses like that is not like that.
This night, there aren't many Arabs at the Hard Rock. But Chris and Brad say they saw tons of Arabs in traditional dress at the mall. And earlier in the day, they volunteered with disabled Arab kids. But after beers, Long Island iced teas, and drinks called car bombs, liberty with a purpose starts to wear off, and things get a little dark. One gal admits she was terrified when she saw women in the mall who covered their faces. Another guy gets in a really nasty fight with his girlfriend outside. His friend starts hitting on everyone in sight.
Will you marry me?
Then a Green Day medley comes on. This makes Brad think about his gal back home.
She met some other guy. I guess, you know, there's a grocery store called Food Lion. Yeah. I guess he makes more money than I do.
At Food Lion.
Yeah, Food Lion. Me and her were together for 4 years. They've been together for a month, and they're already engaged.
I just got told it's last call for the bus. Last call for the bus for our mates from the States.
Claire's not supposed to say who the bus is for, but by now, everyone in the Hard Rock knows it's there to shuttle drunk soldiers back to port. One table of German tourists actually cheers when they hear the sailors are leaving. Brad and Chris decide they'll stay for a while and take a taxi back later. Just a few more songs, they say. Okay, so maybe the band doesn't sound that great. But that's not what matters, they tell me. What matters is that they sound just like home. In Dubai, I'm Kelly McEvers for Weekend America.
To hear more from our Weekend Pass series, go to our website, weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America is made possible by grants from CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from public radio stations including WBUR Boston, WCPN Cleveland, KPCC Los Angeles, and KUOW Seattle, and is made possible in part by the University of Washington Executive MBA Program.
A Minnesota woman will never forget what a spring sojourn taught her about America. Coming up on Weekend America.
From American Public Media, this is Weekend America. I'm Desiree Cooper with John Moe. Bill Radke's away this weekend, but that didn't stop him from asking his favorite question. What's the soundtrack to your weekend? We've been going across the country listening to people's musical companions. We've heard old country, singer-songwriters, avant-garde. Chad Switecki lives in Flint, Michigan, but not for long. He's a journalist who's moving to Austin, Texas this Saturday. Bill spoke to Chad about his weekend soundtrack. It's Respiration by Black Star.
The new moon rode high in the crown of the metropolis, shining like who on top of this? People were tussling, arguing and bustling. Gangsters of Gotham, hardcore hustling. I'm wrestling with words and ideas. My ears prick, seeking what will transmit. The scribes can apply the transcript. Yo. This ain't no time where the usual is suitable. Tonight alive, let's describe the inscrutable, the indisputable. We New York, the narcotics, draped in metal and fiber optics. We're mercenaries who paid to trade hot stocks in for profits. Thirsty criminals, dick pockets. Hard knuckles on the second hands of working class watches. Skyscrapers.
Chad, why is Respiration your weekend soundtrack?
Well, you know, I'm a reporter and a storyteller, and I love the imagery and the storytelling that they're doing right there. You know, it opens right with that line, you know, the new moon rode high in the crown of the metropolis. That's just a great, vivid image, and it just kind of kicks the whole thing off. And, you know, it goes through the whole tale of life in the city. You know, it's got that feeling of, you know, there are 8 million stories in the naked city, and this has been one of them.
NASDAQ averages, my narrative grows to explain its existence amidst the harbor lights which remain in the distance. So much on my mind that I can't recline. Blast the holes in the night till she blends sunshine. Breathe in the hail vapors from bright stars that shine. Breathe out. We smoke, retrace the skyline. Heard the bass ride out like an ancient.
What does this song capture about your home, Flint, Michigan?
Well, I mean, obviously they're talking about New York City and Chicago, but you know, it kind of talks about the struggles and the ups and downs of people in a city, and I think that's kind of what it means to me is living in Flint, Michigan. It's a city with lots of downs, some ups, but lots of downs.
Tell us about Flint. What kind of ups and downs?
Well, I mean, you know, anyone who's seen a Michael Moore movie knows, the auto industry is left of, is kind of, you know, scarred remains are here now. And, you know, that creates just lots of problems, people losing jobs and having to move away and just all the problems that go along with a declining economy. The other thing about that song is there are great people in it, and there are also great, great people in Flint. And I've been here for 8 years, and, you know, I'm going to miss the heck out of a ton of people here. And I think, in a way, that song is a valentine to the city. And, you know, as much as I could write if I could write a valentine to Flint, I'd like to do something kind of like it.
To spoil the shows, to the winners, the spoils go. I take the L, transfer to the 2, head to the gates. New York life type trife, the Roman Empire State. So much on my mind, I just can't recline. Blast the holes in the night till she bless sunshine. Breathe in, hail vapors from bright stars that shine. Breathe out. Breathe smoke.
When do you turn to this song on your weekends?
When I like to think about things and kind of get a little inspired, maybe before I'm writing a story, this is something I'll throw on to just kind of study again the words and the the images that they're painting, and just kind of challenge myself. All right, Switecki, this is what you've got to aim for. These guys are doing it right. Even if everything looks normal, there are just 8 million stories in the naked city, and that's why this song is so great. It makes you think about everyone's story and what they've got going on in their lives, the good and the bad.
Chad Switecki from Flint, Michigan, soon to be from Austin. Thank you for sharing your weekend soundtrack with us.
Thank you.
So some days I take the bus home just to touch home. From the crib I spend months gone. Sat by the window with a clutch stone, listening to shorties cuss long. Young girls are weak minds, but they bust strong.
That's a valentine to Flint, Michigan. Do you have a song that powers or soothes your weekend, that adds color or feeling?
Share it with us. We want to hear it. We're waiting with open ears and an open website. Contact us, weekendamerica.org.
Yet I love home. Ask my guy how he thought traveling the world sound. Found it hard to imagine he hadn't been past downtown. It's deep. I heard the city breathing asleep. A reality I touched.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
Thanks for sharing your weekend with us. I'm Desiree Cooper, here with John Moe. This past month, we've been sharing stories of people experiencing springtime as it blossoms around the country. We're inching closer to it here in St. Paul, aren't we, John?
Well, it was supposed to be. That's what the calendar says. But we did get some snow overnight, so I'm not sure really how you can tell.
Exactly. You know, I'm amazed. Allergies arrive right on time. That's how I can tell spring has arrived. One of our listeners shared with us her memory of another springtime rite of passage. Picture this. Spring break, 1972. Three college-aged girls in Minnesota are excited about their vacation to Florida. But things don't go exactly as planned. Marianne Wise takes the story from here.
It was April 1972, and I was 18 and a half years old. Spring break, we were so excited to get out of Minnesota, long winter, when you live in the Midwest, and the ocean just has this exotic pull. And we were so pumped up to go and had this ride all set up with our fellow student. And the bags were packed, and we were going to leave early in the morning. The phone rings, and it's our friend John, and his plans have changed, and he's not going to Florida after all, and our ride had fallen through. Oh, we were just devastated. We just thought, oh, no, we were so disappointed. And then we just kind of looked at one another and said, you know what? There's strength in numbers. Why don't we hitchhike? And I remember we threw our keys on the kitchen table and we symbolically shut the door, locked it behind us as though there's no turning back. We were just giddy, just gleeful. Let's go. We had a sign, a little cardboard sign, and I'm pretty sure the sign said Fort Lauderdale. And the three of us are standing, just sort of shoulder to shoulder on the side of the road. And so we would just, put out our thumb, and people picked us up. So here it is now, the end of our second day, and it's probably 10 o'clock at night, and we had been deposited on a exit entrance ramp outside of Calhoun, Georgia, and pretty soon a car comes by, slows in front of us, and wouldn't you know it, it's the cops. And we all just had this sinking feeling like we are so busted. None of our parents knew that we were hitchhiking. And the officer got out of the car and said there'd been some trouble lately, and he didn't think it was safe for us to be on the road. And he said, well, hop in. And he started driving back to the station, and I remember that he saw somebody who was obviously drunk driving in front of us, kind of weaving around. And rather than pull the guy over, he simply followed him home and watched him get out of the car and fumble with his keys and get in the house. And next, then, he drove us to the station. And we got in the station, and there's three cots with pillows placed, and we knew exactly who those three cots were for, and it was for us. And in the morning, the same guy who picked us up in the squad car came back and told us to get in his car, and he took us to the local diner and bought us breakfast and returned us to the entrance ramp of the freeway, let us out of the car, and cautioned us to be careful out there. And pretty soon, we were in a car going down the road again. So finally we arrive in Florida. Now it's time to come home. And, oh man, 36 rides down. How many is it going to take to get back? And we were sort of exhausted by that time. And we get, I think we're outside of Miami, maybe, and it's our very first ride. And the fella driving us notices the car ahead of us with two young men in the car, and the car has Minnesota license plates. And the driver that we're with says, I have an idea. Why don't one of you grab this piece of paper here, write Minnesota ? On the paper, and I'll pass him. And as I'm passing him, I'll honk my horn, try to get his attention. You can put the sign up in the window and point to yourselves. And who knows, maybe they're going to Minnesota. Well, that's exactly what we did. And the two guys in the car with Minnesota license plates nod, yes, pull off to the side of the road. And we hop in and we get one ride all the way home. It just felt charmed. It felt like a charmed trip. It just felt like a charmed life. Well, you know, thinking back on the trip, it's one thing to do it when you're young, but now I've got this daughter of my own who's 17, and I really hope she doesn't do anything so foolish. What I do wish for her is that she meets the kind of characters that we met on the road, and that she has people when she is in tough spots or potentially dangerous spots. I do hope people find her and take care of her as we were taken care of. Wake up, Maggie.
Marianne Wise lives in Stockholm, Wisconsin. There's a great picture of her and her two hitchhiking buddies. They're posing with cops in that Georgia jailhouse. Thumb a ride to our website, weekendamerica.org.
You're listening to Weekend America. I'm John Moe. Every week, we try to bring you the full scope of what's happening on the weekends in America. One way we do it is through a little box on our website called America's Weekend. Just go to our website, go check it out, weekendamerica.org. You'll see those pictures. It grabs the latest 98 pictures from the photo sharing site Flickr that are tagged with Weekend America, and then it shares those pictures with you.
Yeah, like right now I'm on the site and there's water skiers. It looks like some women having a bridal shower.
There's a reason every one of those pictures was taken, and it makes for some pretty great stories. We talked to the people who took some of our favorite photos, and we asked them to share.
Hi, my name is Stephen Moore, and I am from Denver, Colorado. In this photo are my two dogs, Grendel and Beowulf, for their last photo opportunity with me before moving to Ohio to live with my cousin. My mom flew out on Thursday, and then my dad was coming out on Friday to drive them back to Ohio. I was worried that they would have trouble adjusting, but when my mom came, they chose to sleep in bed with her, which was a really good sign. But around 4 a.m., I heard some whimpering outside my door. I really felt guilty. I thought that they really needed me. So I opened the door, and they just ran right past me, got some water from their water dish, and went right back into the guest room with my mom. But I felt just relieved because I knew they'd be just fine without me.
I'm Sarah Brannigan, and I live in Richmond, Virginia. In this photo, three friends of mine are jumping behind the campfire at our camping trip at Pocahontas State Park. It kind of started randomly one weekend. We went to the beach and decided to just jump around, and it made us laugh and felt like it was something that we wanted to keep doing in different places and document our jumping. All of us are grad students, and it's just something that kind of started spontaneously and made us feel young or made us feel happy or free or whatever it is that the jumping does. It really does change your state of mind.
Hi, my name is Greg Shuey, and I live in New York City. In the picture, I'm following my delightful daughter, Alex, down the street to the city. That day, my wife and I bought Alex her fabulous yellow raincoat. The moment she saw it, she had to have it, because yellow happens to be her favorite color. When we were walking down the street, we'd have to stop every few paces as she saw her reflection in a storefront or in a bus shelter. even the grimmest, most severe New Yorkers couldn't help but smile. You just see this vision of yellow bouncing down the street.
The vision of yellow. Check out pictures of Stephen's two dogs. They are now safely in Ohio. Sarah's jumping frenzy and Greg's very happy and very yellow daughter. When you go to our website, weekendamerica.org, and check out America's Weekend, brought to you through Flickr. Well, Mother's Day is now just 2 weeks away, and that makes you wonder a little bit about the best Mother's Day gift ever. What is it?
Well, aside from the little bundle of joy that made you a mother in the first place, right?
Granted, yes.
Well, what about those handmade cards or the macaroni necklaces?
You know, us dads, we never get, like, macaroni neckties.
Aw.
It's really too bad. Well, what are you hoping from your kids this Mother's
Day? You know, at this point, I am so easy. All I want is downtime and a chance to get into my garden.
Okay, well, that doesn't seem too challenging. We want to hear from you, listeners. What was your best Mother's Day gift ever? We want to hear from the givers and the receivers on this one.
Did you get a trip or a family heirloom? And what did it mean to you?
And if you have a photo of that gift, please send it along with your story. On Mother's Day weekend, we're going to share it with the world at weekendamerica.org. And really, honestly, Mom wants you to write to us. She told us that.
Duluth is not Duluth by any other name. In Duluth, Minnesota, it's snowy, windy, and in the high 30s today. In Duluth, Georgia, it's rainy and nearly 80. And now, here's John for more weekend weather.
If you're in Auburn, Maine today, you'll experience clouds and 56 degrees. And you'll probably hear someone insist something like Squicklebopix is a word. Scrabble Fest is a charity fundraiser tournament celebrating the classic game of wit, wordsmithery, and getting frustrated at your stupid tiles. I'm sure a Squicklebopix time will be had by all. See, now it counts. Pensacola, Florida borders Alabama, so close you can throw a rock to Alabama. Or a fish. Competitors at the Interstate Mullet Toss hurl a mullet across state lines for distance and prizes. Clouds, 79 degrees, fish hurtling across the sky. The record fish toss is about 187 feet. The record for throwing a guy with a mullet haircut, somewhat shorter. Who's up for trouting? Kalkaska, Michigan hosts the National Trout Festival. The theme, trouting round the world. That's right, trout is now a verb. He trouts, they trout, we have trouted. Clouds, 49 degrees for contests in grocery cart races and pizza eating. I didn't even know trout ate pizza. And the fact that they can push a grocery cart is really impressive. For information on these and other events, go to weekendamerica.org. With a little bit of weather everywhere, I'm John Moe for Weekend America. A man, a minivan, a hamster, 1,600 miles, minus 20-degree weather, and an existential crisis. It wasn't exactly a vacation, but it is coming up on Weekend America.
Weekend America is supported by the Fetzer Institute as part of its campaign for love and forgiveness, online at loveandforgive.org.
From American Public Media, welcome to The Weekend. I'm Desiree Cooper with John Moe. Now, John and I are coming to you from St. Paul, where we both have moved within the last year. Well, sort of.
Sort of for you. Yeah, right. You're still commuting between Detroit and St. Paul until you can move here permanently. And I said the other day, it's like you're just sticking your toe in the St. Paul pool. But I did a cannonball. I took the plunge into the deep end, and I moved my whole family here to St. Paul last month.
You know, it's been so hard going back and forth, but I cannot imagine the stress of moving my entire household.
Oh.
And part of my strategy is that I'm going to move after both of my kids are away in college.
Yeah, it was a biggie. I hadn't pulled off a big long-distance move like that since I was about 24 years old, and I owned nothing. But now I'm married, I have two kids, and I had owned my house for 10 years. So I knew it was going to be a lot of work. What I didn't get was how emotional it would really be. I've been keeping track of the process of moving in a story series that we've called Moving Day. And when we moved, we had to make a lot of decisions regarding pets. The fish and the frogs stayed behind. But if you were a mammal in the Moe household, you made the cut.
It's 6:46 a.m. Getting ready to go. Need to go get the hamster.
I love my family. That's why I drove a hamster to Minnesota in a minivan.
Good morning, Fuzzy. Are you ready to go on a trip?
Hamsters are adorable. Totally underrated pet. Simple, too. All you need to do is feed them, clean their cage, and let them run around in the exercise ball once in a while. That's it. And they live maybe 2 years. It's not like a cat, where if you get a cat that's a jerk, then you're stuck with this jerk cat for 15 years. We bought my son a hamster when he turned 5, a lesson in responsibility. I usually take care of it, a lesson in reality.
We got snacks. You want a snack? You want a carrot? Hey, that's my microphone, dude.
My family was moving to St. Paul, and part of moving is actually getting your family to the new place. Driving there in winter seemed dangerous, and with two young kids, too unbearable to imagine. Flying? Too abrupt for a life-changing move. So we booked a sleeper car on Amtrak. Great for us people, but no pets allowed. The most sunflower seed-dependent member of our family was shut out. Still, Fuzzy was family. We had to get her across the country.
Couldn't really put her on an airplane. Having her on a train might have gotten a little difficult. Couldn't leave her behind. It's no good for eating. So here we are.
We kicked around some ideas and finally realized there was only one option. Drive her there. We loaded up the van, buckled her cage on the passenger seat, and Fuzzy and I hit the road. A man and his hamster.
We're pulled over in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho right now. The gorgeous view of Lake Coeur d'Alene. Do you see it?
Now, this trip served many functions. It was practical. I'd drop off the van and some of our stuff in St. Paul so it would be there when we arrived. And it would also give me some alone time. The job of moving had wrecked me. Sort every possession we have into cardboard boxes, hug our dear friends, knowing everything will be different from then on, and do it all on deadline. It had all made me short-tempered, jumpy, hard to be around. So this trip would be like a vacation for me.
It's about 30 degrees outside. We're driving through western Montana, about 70 miles west of Missoula. Hamsters are from Syria.
Fuzzy wasn't much of a travel companion. Hamsters are nocturnal, which made things like stopping for lunch kind of dull.
I heard of the roast beef, but do you want some lettuce? Still sleeping, huh? Well, it is only 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Fuzzy slept. The temperature dropped. And I began to think how stupid this plan really was. I had brought a fragile desert animal on a winter drive through the northern plains. I obsessively kept leaning over, poking Fuzzy, making sure she was breathing.
If I can just keep this hamster alive from Seattle to St. Paul, then maybe I kind of know what I'm doing. Maybe I can handle things a little. It's kind of crazy that it's come to that, but that's what it's come to.
My family was really excited about moving, the adventure, the novelty, taking a risk. But a risk is a risk. It was terrifying. We had sold our home in Seattle, and we couldn't go back. The kids didn't know a soul in Minnesota. Was I leading an adventure or ruining lives? When we reached the hotel, I doted upon Fuzzy.
Well, we made it to the room, Fuzzy. Room 307 at the Fairfield Inn, Billings, Montana. All right, you got your water. Let's give you some food. How you doing? Are you feeling okay? You're eating the mic again.
Day 2 was much colder. By the time we were west of Fargo, minus 20. I didn't dare stop the car. I feared that if I opened the door, the rush of cold air would kill Fuzzy on the spot.
Probably not going to give her a lot of outdoor time because of all the dying she would do.
This trip was supposed to give me a break from my anxieties. Instead, the anxieties got condensed into one hamster. Night fell. I drove white-knuckle style, hunched over the steering wheel. And then I looked down at Fuzzy. She was awake, running on her exercise wheel. Finally, we reached Fergus Falls, Minnesota, and stopped for the night. I rested and talked to my hamster.
That was a long day. It's about 12:30. We're in the hotel. You're in your exercise ball. And you're doing fine. Your continued living makes me feel like a more capable human being, Fuzzy.
I slept. She stayed up all night running on the wheel, healthy as could be. It's a bad idea to let an animal as fragile as a hamster symbolize the fate of your family, but as we pulled into the Twin Cities, I felt triumphant. I had taken care of my hamster. I had taken care of my family. I could do this. This move would be okay.
Okay, Fuzzy. Minneapolis. Let's get the hamster inside.
Our friends took the hamster. I flew back to Seattle. We all hopped a train and came to St. Paul, and my son was reunited with Fuzzy. Then my daughter wanted a hamster, so we bought her one, too.
So now Fuzzy gets a new brother or sister and a new home. That's so sweet.
And, of course, I put some pictures of our trip on the website weekendamerica.org. And my favorite photo, Des, is the one where Fuzzy has crammed a whole baby carrot stick into her cheeks.
Aww.
And then she got stuck coming out of her little hamster house and gives me kind of a plaintive, worried look. And that'll do it for another hour of American Public Media's Weekend America. I'm John Moe.
And I'm Desiree Cooper. You can download a free podcast of the entire program at weekendamerica.org. Hey, Bill, hope you're out there enjoying your weekend.
Weekend America is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. This program is made possible with support from AIR, the Association of Independence in Radio, and public radio stations including WMFE Orlando, KUOW Seattle, and KNOW St. Paul, and made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Weekend America is produced and distributed by
American Public Media.
When you think weekend in a Las Vegas gated community, what comes to mind? Swimming pools, palatial estates, neighbors outside socializing. But what about during a foreclosure crisis?
The break-ins, the busted windows, the mysterious neighbors across the street who don't speak, the broken down cars.
On the next Weekend America, a foreclosure crisis hits the capital of America's weekend, Las Vegas. Join us.